Hello listener, Craig here. I had some health problems this week and wasn't able to do as much editing as I'd like on this episode. I'm putting the episode out as is because I'd like to stick to our regular fortnightly schedule if I'm able to.
The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Hello, audience. This is the drawing for episode 44 of the Big Red Couch. I've got in my hands a block of old business cards, so I'm going to cut to roughly in the middle of it. Ben, my left or my right?
Right.
Okay. Top card, bottom card?
Bottom card.
Bottom card. Okay. Holding it up to the camera.
That is totally upside down, but I think it is called...
Oh, sorry.
This is actually one I've been looking forward to for a while. This is Gravity Princess from Just Dave and the Thursday Gamers of Montreal.
Gravity Princess. Cool.
It's just kind of a funky name. Is Mystic Montreal still exist? I mean, is it lost in the ages of time? Or
Mystic Montreal?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I can't corroborate these things because it's overseas and I'm very poorly travelled.
I see. As in Montreal as a place of mysticism? I mean, I know Charles Delint was doing his best, but...
maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Okay, so, Gravity Princess. Let's see what we come up with.
Some days later...
Hello, listener, and welcome to the Big Red Couch. On the microphones today, from the Manor, we have...
Ben.
And here at the Big Red Couch recording studio, we have Craig. This is episode 44, and our topic is Gravity Princess.
This was brought to us by Just Dave and the Thursday Gamers of Montreal.
That's right. But it's nice that those ones are still there in the system, because we hadn't had one for a while. I was a little bit worried that either they'd sort of built up in a corner of the box, which is frankly concerning given that it's a cylinder, or that we just run through them all.
That's Just Dave, whatever reason he's named that, is still providing us with content at an admirable rate.
Indeed. So they might have multiple Daves.
It's true. It could be an unjust Dave, I suppose, if there's enough of them. Like an ethically questionable Dave.
Frankly a bit dodgy Dave.
I've known quite a few frankly a bit dodgy Daves, to be fair, so.
All right guy, but I wouldn't let him date my sister Dave. This kind of thing.
Yeah, I hear an argument for that. And, you know, maybe they're not even gaming on Thursday anymore, but I think they should stick with the Thursday Gamers moniker. Mm. It's an established brand and people trust it.
Indeed, yeah. When you get a Thursday Gamer's idea, you know exactly what you're in for.
Wow, okay.
I'm not sure what that was, actually.
Yes, I could hear the Joss Sticks and Whales song.
It was a little bit, yes. All right, I'll put down my wind chime, pack away the Dreamcatcher, and we'll get on with this.
Yes, that's been our marketing woo corner. So let's press on into gaming woo.
Indeed. Gaming woo. Gravity Princess.
So, we had ideas, which is, you know, fantastic, because that's what the show is about.
I had some ideas-ish. You want to go first, or shall I, or...?
Lay your ideas down.
All right. I couldn't get past Gravity Princess being the name of some kind of space liner.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard the "you sunk my battleship" noise, so that's good. Though, maybe we should have that as a sound effect that people can trigger.
Yes, all aboard the failboat.
Yes. I couldn't get past the idea of some sort of liner. And it basically reminded me of a game, a Traveller game that I played in years ago, where for some reason we as a party decided, warship, pah, trading, pah, we're going to be a passenger liner.
Awesome.
I'm not certain the GM was necessarily planning for, but he ran with it admirably.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I'm thinking that the Gravity Princess game, if I was doing it as a convention one-shot or as a very short thing, then it would be, you know, a little bit Murder on the Orient Express kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the ship, something happens, and people get to deal with that, be it space pirates or murder or... hyperdimensional ghosts, whatever. I'm going to write down the hyperdimensional ghosts because that's quite a cool idea.
Ghost pirates. Space ghost pirates.
All right.
Can't lose.
Got a Doctor Who episode right there.
The entirety of one some days.
If it was a longer game, I think you'd have to go with the crew of the Gravity Princess. Mm-hmm. And so you'd have something that was... I'm not sure what system you'd use, but something that could handle something that's a little bit... What's the word I'm looking for? A little bit soap opera-y.
Yeah, I'm hearing that for some... Actually, no, I have the Love Boat theme playing in the back of my head for some reason, so yeah.
And so do I now. Mm-hmm. Yes, so, I wouldn't want to turn it into the Love Boat in space, but...
Of course you would. That's what you're all about. That's a lie.
It is true. My secret shame. You know about my shrine to Captain Meryl Steubing then, don't you?
Okay, all right, that went a dark place.
No, it went to a happy place.
But no, it could be an interesting... The trials and tribulations of a bunch of, you know, purses and other jobs on boat thing. Sorry, my nautical knowledge ran out.
Nautical knowledge is not strong on this one, is it?
No, not at all. No. Yeah, purses are a thing. That's all I know.
Yeah, actually, if you had somebody from the mechanical division, people scattered all over the ship and have adventures, or adventurous things happen that they get to deal with.
Hmm.
That's how I do a longer term game of that, where part of the story is what's happening each week. So it is very much a adventure of the week, with a bit of a longer running thing of what is happening to the characters.
Yeah, no, that would be the social interaction and the trials and tribulations, what the characters get up to. Mm. You know, and this week they pull into, you know, a dock, and something interesting happens, like suddenly a passenger is sick and they have to be quarantined, or, you know, high potential space ghost pirates roam around the ship. You could make it, it would be very much like a serial TV show, a bit lighthearted, but, you know, with tense moments. It could be, yeah, that could be pretty strong. Quite a day in the life of a jolly big space liner.
Indeed. You could have outbreaks of space norovirus, or that's possibly just a little bit close to home these days.
The cruise line thing, it did occur to me as well, because there is a reference in the Terran Trade Authority books to... I cannot remember the name of the ship itself.
It's a ship that ends up colliding with itself?
Something like that. But yeah, there is a liner that's, I think, Jupiter Princess or something similar.
Oh, could be, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a couple of... Galaxy Queen. Something similar sort of thing. But yeah, there's a... sort of like a swan-shaped ship with a, you know, great big fan sort of structures at the back and so forth. It looks pretty awesome.
That would presumably be the book Space Wreck, Ghost Ships and Derelicts of Space.
Mm.
It
also appears in the other Terran Trade Authority books. So yeah, I can see that being a really interesting setting for sort of like a long-term game. You get the move locations and see various interesting activities, and, you know, have guest stars.
Ooh,
yeah,
nice.
You could literally have PC guest stars and so forth, people coming in and shaking things up just for this episode kind of thing. That'd be kind of interesting. I'm trying to think if I've ever spinned a game in that sort of roaming style, but I can see some huge potential in it.
According to the Wikipedia page, because I had completely forgotten about Terran Trade Authority, because there was the RPG.
There was that? Really?
There was. Apparently published in 2006. I've never seen a copy.
Yeah.
There may have been licensing issues. A lot of stuff is listed as plan.
Oh, right. Well, it would have been an interesting thing anyway, because those books were essentially created to do blown up, good quality copies of, you know, 1960s, 70s, sci-fi paperback covers.
Yep.
So that was essentially recycling art, but tacking on a bit of a story as well.
And were quite a success. Rather took everybody by surprise. I went to a panel at the London Worldcon where they had Stuart Cowley and various other people. Stuart Cowley being the guy who put the damn things together.
Mm.
So talking about how they came about and The fact that he wasn't actually supposed to have written all the words because he was an editor, not a writer, but they kind of ran out of time and couldn't find a writer who could get what he wanted. So he just wrote it and didn't tell anybody. And then they wanted another book.
They're like, balls, I'm an author.
Yeah. At which point they needed to get back in contact with the author, and then it all came out. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. I've completely forgotten about the Terran Trade Authority. All right.
Mm, no, definitely. That's why I thought you were referencing.
I wish I had, because that would have been really cool. But no, I completely failed to think of that one.
Yeah.
I have kind of a secondary idea based on that, but maybe we could do yours first and then bounce back.
Hmm. Sure.
It's not a fully fledged idea. It's kind of a half idea.
No problem. What I had been considering, I was kind of thinking about the notion of princess and the cultural baggage that comes with that. The cultural stock of princesses at the moment is pretty high. At the moment they currently appear to be forming a giant alliance under the Disney banner because for the various trade and so various marketing and franchise agreements and things between Hasbro and the Star Wars thing moving under Disney. They're all Disney princesses now, this unstoppable army.
So eventually Disney is going to buy the British royal family and Monaco.
Yeah, I think that's where it's going.
Okay. It had to happen.
That's not my idea, but I'm kind of... The Sinister Princess Army would be kind of a weird game. I could definitely see it as a pop culture reference convention game if you get a bunch of people playing totally unaligned princesses from various shows and series and so forth. That could be kind of bizarre.
Would we count the not actually princesses from a strictly legal standpoint?
Not actually princesses? Well, yeah, that's a complex issue. There's the princesses who are absolute monarchs in all but name. There's a few of them. I think that
Frozen, we are looking at you.
Yeah. Princess Celestia.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she's the authority. There's no question about that. She's not a queen though.
For some reason.
Equestria is a kingdom, no kings. Interesting. It's probably a story behind that. Princess Bubblegum runs the Candy Kingdom.
Again, no Candy King.
No Candy King.
I think the secret history of some of these princesses could be a way to go, because why are there so many princesses who are running kingdoms? Where is that top layer of government? Is there a basement somewhere? A quiet, unmarked grave in an unremarkable courtyard in the castle.
In Bubblegum's case, I think that's almost certain. Yeah.
In Bubblegum's case, wouldn't it be a vat of acid in which the carcass was slowly being pickled?
Possibly. Yeah, something occurred. Of course, there is a narrative driver for that. You have a female protagonist. Queens are always evil, apparently. So you have somebody for female viewers, especially adolescent female viewers to identify with. They're often figures of like virtue and leadership. They display admiral qualities, and these days they get out and do a lot more stuff. They're not all Princess Buttercup. Though she started to kick
Buttercup. Princess Bride? Yep.
From Princess Bride. She
started to kick ass towards the end.
Yeah, started working on it, but a lot of them. So it's kind of this thing of moving from sort of a passive virtue to action kind of thing. So I think that's the reason that this comes up quite a lot. And because of Disney, queens are evil and the parents are always dead or evil or both. So
dead evil queens, yes.
Dead evil queens. So yeah, you could run a con game for the random sampling of pop culture princesses. What do you need? Princess Leia? Another Disney princess allegedly?
Well, she is now.
Yeah. Like I said, everyone. Would it be too soon to put Princess Diana in a role-playing game?
I don't know. For a start, I was desperately trying to come up with a really off-taste joke, and nothing was working, which is deeply annoying. But I don't know.
I think Sailor Moon is technically a princess as well.
Huh.
Or at least has a title of some sort.
Princess.
Well, yeah. So yeah, that's kind of that's a possibility if anyone is brave enough to tackle that.
If so, and it works out brilliantly, we get the credit. If not, we don't know you.
Yes.
You have never listened to this show.
We are not here.
Big Red Couch disavows any and all knowledge of your actions.
But tell us how.
Actually, no, that's not true. We just love to know either way. Yeah, anyway, so
that sounds
princesses.
Okay, so that's an interesting angle. But trying to figure out how we've tied the two words together and so forth, the notion I came up with is set in space. As I said, the ideas cross over a little bit. But the notion that I had was a society that's in a fairly vast space station that uses centripetal force and rotation to provide gravity.
Yep.
However, it's not a ring habitat. It's effectively a counterbalanced hammer or exclamation mark shape, where one end is the plant gear, the reactors, all this dense, heavy stuff that's dangerous and needs to be shielded and so forth. On the other end of the other end of the structure, you have the habitable parts, and they have a gravity approaching 1G at the very outside.
Okay.
What they've wound up with is a tiered society where the 1% inverted commas live at the top of the exclamation mark, or the very top of the hammer.
Where the gravity is.
And because of the adaption to weightlessness and so forth, this is a prime real estate. This is where food is grown. This is where people remain healthy or less affected by the bone density loss and all sorts of the other little issues, which interestingly, there's a sexual dimorphism in the impacts of gravity between men and women, which is kind of interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, it's not like huge or anything, but it's like, there's an eye degeneration that men get that apparently doesn't affect women. And it might just be a scale thing, you know, on average. On average, men are slightly bigger. It might just be relative sizes and so forth, but which is kind of interesting. But so you have you have a literally stratified society. The people living closer to the center, or woe betide you, living between the axis, the center of mass, and the reactors. Because your docking structures and so forth would be near the center, so you don't have to dodge, literally hammer the space station coming around the other way. Be pretty exciting landing, and I got to say that my couple of the hours I've been playing on Elite Dangerous recently have definitely helped inspire this.
I see. Mm-hmm. You've been clouted by the space station a few times, haven't you?
Strictly speaking, it's a whole frame of reference thing, but yeah, I probably have been smacked in the face by a space station all time to time.
I see.
Elite Dangerous, by the way, not a sales pitch, is a recreation of a game from like 1984 on the ZX Spectrum and BBC Micro, I think. Space trading game. The original one boasted a gigantic universe stuffed into a few K of memory. And they decided to resurrect it and kickstart it. And it's about to go public. And if you played the original game and really enjoyed it, you'll really enjoy this one. But it's kind of an MMO with no other people in it, which is a little weird. I'm enjoying it. Actually, the best description is, if you thought Euro Truck Simulator needed lasers, you'll love it.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yeah, sure.
Euro Truck Simulator.
Yeah.
Can you expand on, is this an actual game?
It's an actual game.
It's a truck driving game.
You drive a truck.
Around Europe.
All over Europe.
Okay.
Yes, that is all you do.
I can't tell whether this is the sort of game that I would love or hate, to be honest.
There are Let's Plays. You can watch people drive their truck. Elite Dangerous is a little bit more exciting than that. Like I said, parking is a bit, you need to get a hang of that. And you run to pirates and you can take various missions. But currently people who have been expecting a more MMO experience, because they've created like a representation of the galaxy, which is 400 billion stars.
Dude.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. With procedurally generated solar systems and space stations and so forth. But as you might expect, A, you can get lost.
And B, there's nobody else there.
Well, yeah, you may not be in the same location as other people. And its support for communication between players is nascent at this point. I think it's got huge potential. And I kind of like, okay, I'm going to pick up 30 tons of uranium ore from this place and take it to that place. Cool. And you make your journey, you refuel at the local star, jump through, I think they call it witch space, but you know, it's kind of a wibbly wobbly, swirly thing where you travel from solar system to solar system, fight off the odd pirate.
Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
So that's just me rambling for a bit. But the idea that you have a space station where society is, like I say, stratified, the closer you get to null G,
well, the lower on the pecking order you are.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not been long enough that people have developed spooky, have actually genetically adapted to this, but people's lives are different.
Yep.
And the idea that I thought would be good to use in a setting to go along with our little inspiration would be that if, I'm assuming it's going to be like a corporate, society,
mm-hmm.
but it's been around long enough for it to almost devolve into an aristocracy.
Ah, okay.
And the notion that something like the chairwoman's daughter or someone is, as part of a, let's not say royal visit, but let's say royal visit, is touring the docks or something like that, and something happens, a disaster, an insurrection, maybe people are just sick of the inequalities just inherent in their society. And consequently, she is cut off from her security people. She is stranded away from where she normally resides and has to get back. And the idea of putting a party together out of this person who, she's out of her element. She is as well trained and well prepared and well schooled as anybody can expect to be. She is supposed to effectively succeed in some capacity. She is as well trained, well schooled, well prepared as anyone in society is likely to be. She has access to the systems of the station to some degree, override passes and so forth. But using them may draw attention, may bring difficult things. She's unused to zero low G compared to people who hang out there natively. But as you move closer to single G, she's more used to that. So she's not a wilting flower. She's just well out of her depth. And the idea that, say, people who are native to the lower tiers recognize that if they don't get the chairman's daughter back in one piece, terrible things will happen one way or the other. Maybe they're in it for, maybe they're just going to miss out on an opportunity to ingratiate themselves, or maybe they realize that society will just start to break down at this point. And making a group out of sort of these disparate elements and having them not quite fight their way back up the tiers.
Certainly work their way back up the tiers.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you're kind of going to get a situation potentially where if you've got a sufficient cross-section, as it were, of the tiers, you've got people's usefulness will change over the course of that journey.
Yeah. The idea that the folks that are used to the light Gs, in zero G, you don't want to mess with them. They can do things to you that are unfathomably just terrifying. They can launch you at great speeds across the room before you know what's going on. However, as they start to approach the far end, as the gravity that they're not used to, everything will become more taxing, and the stuff they're used to doing just won't work as well.
Mm.
And the idea that, say, this princess character has never actually, isn't actually aware of the scale of the injustice and difficulties these folks face. And, you know, it's a bit of a coming together sort of thing. This dystopia, it sounds like a good setting for like a YA dystopia.
It has that vibe to it. I'm trying not to think Snowpiercer.
Ooh, yeah, that was. I haven't seen that yet, but there's a lot of social injustice and moving between.
Social injustice mapped onto a physical space.
Yeah.
Because you've got the absolute lowest of the low right at the back of the train,
mm-hmm.
and the people in charge right at the front.
Right. No, there's good equivalence there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Shades of the Emperor's New Groove, in that you would reasonably expect that by the time the princess has ended up back in her place in life, she will have learned a great deal about the way that the world works and the way that previous assumptions
weren't correct.
I can see this working as a... Well, Fate is the obvious example, but I have been reading a bunch of Fate stuff recently, so that's going to happen. But I can definitely see that as a people's aspects change over time.
Hmm. The other thing that I came to mind, I think I need to do a bit more research, is possibly using Lady Blackbird.
Oh, yeah.
Which people have very, they're almost archetypical roles in them, in the setting. Plus it would give the opportunity because you exchange a certain kind of currency for doing dramatic and action-oriented things, but you regenerate that by doing social and personal interactions.
Ah.
Which sounds pretty intriguing. It sounds like a good opportunity for people for that personal growth and so forth as an exploration.
Cool.
Yeah. And, you know, the things that also have a bearing on it are, Master Bujold's Falling Free. The idea of.
Oh, yes, with the quad ears.
Yeah. So they're genetically engineered to live in freefall, but that's the same sort of thing, a bit of suspicion and distrust between people in different environments and so forth.
Mm.
So, and also actually Halo Jones from 2008, at one stage in her many and varied job choices, she winds up on a space liner. So that's something that might be useful research for the cruise ship idea.
Yes, that's a good point. I'd forgotten about that bit of Halo Jones.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the sort of the second half idea or fractional idea that I came up with was embarrassingly enough an idea that had occurred due to remembering episodes of Star Trek Voyager.
Okay, you're admitting that you watched the show. That's a start.
I think we watched the entire first season in one day.
Okay.
Which was interesting because you started to pick out the cycles at which different episode types occurred. So it's sort of every X number of episodes is a Doctor episode, every Y number of episodes is a holodeck episode, which meant that eventually the two synced up, and so you got a Doctor on the holodeck episode.
Interesting. It's eerie.
And it did actually happen.
Wow, that is interesting. I do remember watching Andromeda, which was a big ball of cheese with Kevin Sorbo in the middle, and it became fairly obvious relatively quickly that they couldn't they couldn't afford to have all of the actors on set all the time.
Okay. So they would just pick the actors that they needed or could afford for a given episode.
It seemed very selective, and it was interesting because they didn't even sort of like have walk-in bits or something from that they might have filmed other times. It's like, oh, someone's not here this week. I was like, what? Weird.
Why is that person not here? Never mind.
Actually, they probably did it more delicately than that, but it did start to... the show had other flaws, though not being fundamentally wretched.
Made up for it in a lot of ways?
It was an amusing kind of wretched, at least. And plus it had a genetically engineered race of super soldiers called Nietzscheans.
Oh, who were kind of dicks, as I recall.
They were total dicks, but it was kind of funny.
And hey, Kevin Sorbo getting work.
Yeah, and he's kind of playing the perfect role for his incomprehensibly hammy way that he plays roles. He was literally someone thousands of years out of time and totally irrelevant in the current universe.
It's like it was written for the role. Oh, wait, it was.
Mm.
In any case, yes, it was an idea that had occurred of basically, and it's a bit big dumb object as a story, but basically a spacecraft, some sort of alien spacecraft, possibly a hollowed out asteroid, because those don't get nearly enough love in science fiction, in my view, that is barreling along through space. The interior space is habitable, but the thing is basically uncontrolled, and various people end up on board. So possibly it's going along and kidnapping folks. Possibly it's just a ship that sort of turns up and tends to turn up in a space where it can rescue people. Possibly it just is barreling along on its own course and periodically collects debris, and some of that debris is other spaceships. And so you have this very weird society of people living inside this thing. They have no idea where it's going and are a bit hazy on how to get off.
Okay, so it's like a mobile desert island?
A little bit, yeah.
Right, okay.
The major reason why it came up in the Gravity Princess thing was just when I started thinking about, well, okay, space liner type game, and then this old idea came to mind. Because it sort of covers very much the same things of what do you do when the setting is the adventure.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. It does feel like a sort of an old sci-fi TV, like Moon 1999, something like that.
Space 1999, space. Where the moon gets blasted out into, well, space.
Yeah. That was displayed a shocking lack of the nature of orbital physics and relative masses, but it was a funny show.
And it did give us awesome spacecraft, so I feel they've earned themselves a pass there.
True. The Eagles were practical and kind of amazing. So, yeah.
We could build them out of Meccano.
Yeah.
Or Lego.
They're one of the most practical designs that I've ever seen in a science fiction series. So that's pretty cool. And there was Brian Blessed in an episode, which is, you know, our mark of quality.
Indeed, yes. It's got Brian Blessed in it. You know it's loud.
Indeed.
Very loud.
If I may pour a pint of hand wavium into the engine.
Oh, yep.
The notion that this is it's a lifeboat of some sort, a bizarre hollowed out asteroid or something similar. And just to make everyone's life easier, there is some sort of gravitational anomaly that means it functions a little bit like a planet. Maybe it has, like, it's like a tiny hollow Earth. Maybe it has.
That's what I was thinking with the hollowed-out asteroid, is that they've hollowed it out and they've spun it. So it's got a gravity and an ecosystem. I mean, I rather liked the idea, and this is blatantly ripped off from a William Gibson book, of, you know, if I was trying to figure out how to introduce characters into the scenario, them kind of waking up and finding that their life support pod is now sitting in what appears to be a forest clearing.
That would be pretty cool. The notion that if it was this process was assisted by some sort of anomaly could be that it's weirdly attracted, or it's really basically disabled or distressed ships may fall out of hyperspace close to this thing because it's in space in a weird way, which explains why there is this group here, this diverse sort of community stuck in, you know, this little garden floating around in space. Apparently for no reason.
Nice. There was a setting that somebody suggested a few years ago now on RPGNet, which had to do with the idea that various races from all across the universe will go through, there's certain different ways that you can build a space drive. Yeah, you've got reaction drives, and you've got various sorts of jump drives. And one of the earliest sorts of jump drives is a thing that it's pretty reliable. Eventually people come up with something better and more reliable, but there is a thing that can go wrong with the drive, which means that the ship gets stuck in a moment of time, effectively locked out of the universe.
It gets out of phase or something similar.
Yeah, except time stops on that ship. Just
right.
Bing, everything stops. But then once the universe has expanded enough and gone cold enough, the surface tension is always keeping that ship outside of the universe lessens. Mm-hmm. And so the ship pops back in.
So it's sort of like a meniscus. It's like the surface tension for the universe.
Yes, it's that bubble that floats on top of the water.
Right, so you went, aha, I changed my frame of reference. Pop, doll.
Indeed, and the suggestion that was made by in this idea was that pretty much every race at some point or another uses this drive, and then they move on to something better.
Mm.
And so what happens is, you know, it's very much the end of the universe, most of the stars have gone out, it's very dark out there, and then all of a sudden, with a pop, every ship that ever vanished reappears at the same time. Still there?
Yeah, so there's an aircraft passing overhead.
All right.
No, that's interesting. That's a real, it's like multiple Marie Celeste's kind of.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
and they're all from roughly the same level of technology,
but
give or take.
Totally different portions of the lifespan of the universe.
Indeed. Yeah. And yeah, the reason that this comes to mind is, yeah, if you had the same thing with the gravitational anomaly starship, that possibly the same sort of thing occurs very rarely with jump drives, and for whatever reason, somebody built a lifeboat. Somebody built a ship that the only purpose of it, as near as anybody can tell, is to go crashing around the universe, breaking ships out of being stuck in jump.
Mm. Yeah, maybe space is on the other side is different enough that you've got this rock trolling around. It'll pick these lost ships up now and again.
Mm. And then, of course, the obvious question that comes to mind with that sort of thing is, who on earth would do this and why?
Mm.
That's the bit I don't have an answer to.
Yes. And also, who are those guys and why do they have so many heads?
Yeah.
No, that's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah. Thinking about it, you could possibly use a game like Ocean, or at least the idea of a game like Ocean, which has people, I'm about to butcher the concept very badly, but essentially has people waking up in a strange environment. They have no idea why they're there, where they are, or what's going on. And most of the game is, along the way, people deciding to define, okay, this thing is what's going on.
Cool. Yeah.
And the game pretty much ends when that question is when those questions are answered. So you could maybe take that sort of idea as the jumping off point.
Mm. A mechanic to create the circumstances that you're currently in, and resolve the story in the end.
Indeed.
Cool. Well, that's pretty interesting.
I did listen to a Porcelain Llama Theater. I think it was Porcelain Llama Theater play of it, which was quite interesting.
Okay. Porcelain Llama Theater. You're going to put that in the show notes, because...
Yep. Actual play podcast. Quite good.
Okay. I'm not sure I can bring myself to Google it, though. It's just...
I'll send you a link. It'll be fine.
Those words, I know what they mean, but together they have... don't make any sense.
It's Porcelain Llama Theater. Well, either it's a theater that has just like a porcelain llama outside it, or it's a theater that takes place inside a giant porcelain llama.
Porcelain llama could be a euphemism for a toilet, though.
I'm just visiting the porcelain llama?
Possibly. I don't know.
Just got to go water the porcelain llama. Anyway, we are hilariously off tack.
So
that is where I went with that.
Cool. That's an interesting one. And you were telling me off air that you're doing something with Autonomous Robo at the moment. Have you got any tidbits to share about that?
I have not yet finished reading the book. I'm about halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very impressed with what I've seen so far. It's sort of a nice, culling is perhaps the wrong word, but a nice boiling down of chunks of the Fate ecosystem.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of Fate games out there, and they all do different things, and sometimes that can cause problems.
Well, I'm more and more of the opinion that role-playing games work better when they try and do a thing and do that thing well.
I think that is what is happening, in my view, with the Atomic Robo RPG, because it's got... Well, the thing I was most impressed with is it's got somewhere between 2 and 3.5 character generation systems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a full-blown one involving points, where you have a certain number of points to spend. Excuse me. You can build your own skills, this kind of thing. I had a bash at building some characters while on holiday this week, and yeah, Kev and I put together a forgotten Soviet war bot with basically electronic warfare skills, and were able to put together an electronic warfare skill that did, sort of did things like, make it difficult for other people to detect you, make it easier for you to detect them.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Attack machinery by taking it out of action electronically, that sort of thing. So there's sort of a full point buy type system. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the easy no math system, where you are literally choosing from a list of four things which three you'd like to be able to do, and what order of ability you have in them. Because you've got basically, it's quite nicely broken down into modes, effectively sort of packages of skills, similar to Kerberos Club.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you've got things like science, action, intrigue, banter, and for the very quick character creation, you are effectively just picking of those, which one's good, which one's average, which one's fair, which one don't you have.
Mm.
Yeah. Some skills occur in more than one, and there's a system for sort of taking care of that. You chuck on a few aspects, pick some stunts, you're done.
Cool.
There are also, for the sort of the 2.5 versions, somewhere in between, where they have pre-made some what they call weird modes, because these clusters of skills are called modes. So you can make a character by picking a weird mode and chucking it in there. And weird could be anything from not in the normal skill set, so like pilot or journalist, or could be weird like robot or mutant.
Cool. Well, that's pretty
psychokinetic. Dinosaur. Dinosaur comes up.
Mammal treachery.
Well, admittedly, Dr. Dinosaur does have the aspect of frequently a victim of mammalian treachery.
Indeed.
So yes, I have been reading that on the train on the way back to Auckland.
Mm-hmm.
I was unfortunately also falling asleep a lot on the train on the way back to Auckland, because it's very easy for me to fall asleep on a train.
It's good to know.
I wish I could do that on planes. It would be really convenient. But sadly, I cannot. Buses, yes. Trains, yes. Planes, no. Very sad. But yes, so I'm planning to run a short 2 or 3 session game of that to try the draft thing out.
Awesome. Okay, so do we have any other thoughts about Gravity Princess?
I was trying to come up with something based on fundamental forces of the universe.
Yeah, that's kind of... I thought about that for like 2 minutes and then thought, no, I'm not that good at physics.
I could have done... About the only thing I've got is that the Gravity Princess is going to be quite weak.
But everywhere?
That's the thing, yeah. I could maybe come up with something based on these warring houses of the nuclear forces and the electromagnetic force and that kind of thing. And then there's, these are mighty kingdoms. And then there's the Gravity Princess, who is doing the role of just tying it all together subtly. But I can't really see how to make a game out of that.
Yeah. And the Higgs boson will have to come up at some point. And
what will have to come up at some point?
The Higgs boson.
Yeah, that's true. Who's, whose sphere of influence does the Higgs boson fall?
Indeed. Well, it gives things mass, and mass things gives things gravity, so... at least that's my understanding of how things fall together.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Could it be sort of like a sapphire and steel kind of very, very loosely interpreted...
Okay. That's... Oh, dear God, I think I've just figured out how to do it.
Yeah?
Not good. it's bad. I'm warning you now. I'm thinking somewhat pulpy or possibly somewhat Sailor Scouty.
Mm-hmm.
Interpretation of sapphire and steel, where you've got the Gravity Princess and her chums.
Mm-hmm.
Going out there and having adventures and investigating situations that are metaphorical versions of the different fundamental forces of the universe trying to expand their own sphere of influence into other forces' realms.
Okay. So
it's a shadowy conspiracy by electromagnetism to take over from, and the narrator's knowledge of physics fails at this point, the strong nuclear force. I don't actually know what the strong nuclear force does, but I imagine it's not going to take kindly if electromagnetism starts elbowing its way in there.
Indeed. Also, the universe might implode. But
yeah, and it's up to the gravity princess and chums to sort that shit out.
It's sounding more like the Power Rangers.
I have done a dreadful thing. Yeah, I am a bad person.
I'm getting a strong, very campy kind of vibe of people being dressed up in ridiculous costumes that poorly describe what specific fundamental physics concept they represent.
Wow.
Hmm.
Oh, that's appalling. Quick, inverse squared. We must defeat the... No, that's just... Okay, I know I'm going to be doing a little bit of thinking about that one, so I'll see what I can come up with.
Fair enough.
Not for any desire to play, run, or even hear about it. I think it'll be one of those things that we just sort of put out there and then walk away, never looking back.
All right.
Well, that's about all I had.
One thing I also recalled, I've been playing a little bit of Long Live the Queen, where you're...
Is it an RPG, or
It's almost an RPG, almost, yeah. It's the video game equivalent of an RPG. Sorry.
Okay.
So two camps there. This is not quite a visual novel kind of thing, but basically you're attempting to guide the Princess Elodie through this bizarre, semi-fantastic. She's about to succeed her mother to become queen. To do so, she has to survive to her 15th or 16th birthday. I can't quite recall which. There are forces working against you. And the game plays out as you need to elevate certain skills to pass certain tests, and the story branches and changes how you pass the test or if you fail. And the only way to deal with the options is to have the ability to recognize or to deal with them beforehand. It's not, do you go left or do you go right? It's, do you have a sense of direction? Yes, no.
Ha! Huh.
Everything you do has consequences, and it's all... You are utterly responsible for your fate. And unfortunately, for Princess Elodie, her fates are many and terrible.
Right. So it's frantic pre-planning the computer game.
It is one that if you accidentally selected all the right options the first time, you flicked it. There's no way that that's just complete random happenstance. The idea of the game is fail better every time. Try and figure out when events are coming up and know that if you going to the tournament, you better have either your courtly manners up high enough so you don't offend anyone, or your fencing up high enough so that if you do offend someone, they don't.
You win the deal.
Yeah, you don't get murdered, because it's cutesy anime art, but it's some Game of Thrones shit going on right there. It is, yeah.
Kind of bizarre.
The principal character has way more people trying to kill her than is good for your average teenager.
I see. Well, I know when I was a teenager, I could have done with a few fewer people trying to kill me. So,
may not be the game for you then.
I can definitely see how that would be an issue for a princess.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the particular game is that all you want for is the information to make the right choices.
I see.
Yeah, everything is your fault. You have elected. There doesn't appear to be any randomness in it at all.
Oy.
Yeah. So you can... Some people disappreciate the idea that they can't just out of native being good at games and these sorts of things get through it. It is actually something you have to chip away at and make notes and say, right, if I want to survive this encounter, I need to be by the, week 17, I need to be able to ride a horse. Otherwise, I'm screwed. Maybe I should try another path.
Dude.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
It's
and
sort of putting me in the mind of the old choose-your-own-adventure novels.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is,
I mean, this is one without the dice or anything, and the choices are more. The other aspect is that you can influence the princess's mood by doing various things, and in different moods, whether she's being sort of strong-willed or compliant with the customs and so forth, she's happy or sad, she can get better at different skills more quickly or more slowly. So you're kind of trying to do this thing where you're trying to kind of like, ooh, okay, what can we learn today that's more effective than the other thing? Ah, but if we don't do this thing, doom awaits us. And it's all kind of this shifting, balancing thing.
Ah, so it would appear that there is probably an optimal path through the game.
There's probably several. I haven't got the poor girl to live long enough to have any romantic entanglements at this point, but presumably, given the nature of the game, there are some. So far, it's just been with the stabbing and the poison. I assume there is a happy ending. Maybe not. Maybe this is just the most grimdark game ever.
A stealth grimdark game.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yay, you're going to be queen. Yay, you get different outfits. Murder.
Yay, you get to learn how to do laundry at 3 a.m. to cover up the blood on your outfits.
That hasn't come up yet, but...
but now you're worried.
Now I'm concerned. I really am. Cool. All right, okay. So that is the Gravity of Princesses.
The Gravity of Princesses. Kind of sounds like a fat joke.
Maybe.
I am still liking the Power Ranger Sailor Squad Sapphire and Steel thing, if only because, frankly, that show has it coming.
Which one?
I was thinking Sapphire and Steel, and I love that show, but come on, that would be hilarious.
It would. It's an odd... It was always an odd idea for a show.
Yes?
Yeah.
But it would be even odder if you've got people being arch and strange at each other while wearing brightly coloured Princess Gravity and Princess Gravity and the Attraction Squad.
Oh dear.
Maybe the Space-Time Squad. The Curvature Squad. Princess Gravity and the Curvature Squad. Nothing?
I think we're just spinning wildly out of control. I think we should...
So I should not start writing up a few pictures and sending them to various studios then.
I won't stop you. Someone will. I won't stop you.
And I can't honestly blame them if they do.
Indeed.
All right. Shall we call it there?
All right.
Well, thank you for listening, listener. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Indeed. See you then.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Department of Monstrous Changes.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!